Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to HR Latte. This is Rayanne Thorne, your host. I'm coming to you live from Talent Browser headquarters on Long Island in the wonderful little town of Kings Park. Thanks for joining us today. I'm very excited to talk again about the ongoing series that I've been doing about the candidate experience. I have learned so much about what the candidate and job seekers, applicants of today are experiencing. And today we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about the interview process and actually bettering that for the candidates and the job applicants that are out there today. My very special guest is Reed Wilson, new daddy Reed Wilson. Congratulations to Reed and his wife who on the celebration of their new baby that joined their family recently. And Reed is the head of HR at Briggs Equipment. And so, Reed, I want to give you an opportunity to give us a quick rundown on your background, and then we'll jump right into talking about providing a great interview experience.
Sure. Well, thank you for that powerful introduction. I didn't realize you were talking about me. So a little bit about me. Professionally speaking, I've been in the working industry for nearly 20 years. The first 20-25% of my career is really on the operations side of the house. I began my career with JCPenney as the retailer, began on the ops side, actually began on the selling floor. I worked my way through a management trainee program and then spent some time in store management and leadership. Broke into human resources as a college recruiter, so for 3 years actually spent full-time on campus, covered a quarter of the country. Transitioned into a specialty assignment, learning how to design, develop, and deliver training to obviously an adult audience, and then started becoming a generalist. I worked in a supply chain facility. I was also a generalist in a shared service center. Also did a tour through compensation, supported other parts of the business, i.e. merchants, allocators, buyers, etc. Transitioned out of Penny's a few years ago, went to a small theater chain, worked in a private equity environment, and then almost 2 years ago, I transitioned to Briggs Equipment and now head up the HR side of our business as well as manage part of our equipment sales operations. And from a academic background perspective, of all things, my bachelor's degree is in chemistry, and then I've recently obtained my master's degree in human resource management from a local school here in Arlington. So love it every day. Love to play on both sides of the house from an HR perspective as well as get into the operations side of the house. I actually feel that leading with business expertise helps me be successful as an HR practitioner today. So it's kind of me in a Reader's Digest summary.
Thank you for that, Reed. I feel really fortunate to have so many really wonderful guests on this show. And I know that what you have going on at Briggs Equipment is really focusing on providing a quality interview process for the job seekers. And I know that that's something that your organization, you yourself personally, place a great value on. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on the show today to talk about the difference that the job interview experience can have on the candidate experience for job seekers and for applicants. So let's dig right in. I don't want to waste any more time, and let's start talking about it. So we hear about candidate experience. We've been talking about it for years. Those of us that write or do shows like this have been exploring the topic of bettering the candidate experience for the last several years. When you hear this phrase personally, Reed, as a head of HR for a business that really is trying to make a difference to the candidates that walk through your door. What does that phrase mean to you?
I would say for me, it's how does the candidate feel before, during, and after they leave any interaction with the company. It's little things. It's the tone in an email message. So we communicate, obviously, with candidates verbally over the phone, through the written word. What tone do they feel? If it's a telephone conversation, are they hearing your smile in the tone of the voice? When they get here or get to one of our branches, did we offer them a soft drink, a water, a coffee? Asking them, do they need anything? I guess I'm a simple man in that I view the candidate experience as if you invited them into your home as a guest, how would you treat a guest in your home?
That's really important and key. I think you're the first person that said it like that, so I really appreciate that definition. When in the hiring process do you, as the head of HR with your organization, when do you decide that a job seeker actually becomes a candidate or somebody that you are considering for a hire?
So I'm going to speak to that question from an exempt level perspective, because you have to understand in our business, we have a high amount of technician needs who are non-exempt positions, and then we have a fair amount of exempt level positions, whether they be sales reps or leaders of people. So this answer is going to be more geared towards the exempt level positions, because that's kind of where we started really focusing on the candidate experience, and downstream we'll spend more time getting better at the more technical experience. So
okay.
To cycle back to your original question, we're a bit unique in that we have really shifted our talent sourcing to more of a passive candidate focus. So let me just please indulge me and let me define for you Reed Wilson's definition of passive candidates. That is a person that's in a job, doing a great job, and not looking for a job.
Okay.
To us, that is top talent, and we leverage third-party recruiters to help us source passive talent. So we have a great relationship with our third-party recruiters. I actually consider them an extension of my immediate team. And when they serve talent up to us, because of their credibility and because of how strong they are, they're immediately a candidate. Now, I think where you may have been headed with the question is if you as an employer are considering both active candidates and passive candidates, then there is a time to your question, when do they shift from applicant to candidate?
That's right.
For us, if they're served up as vetted through our partners, they're a candidate.
Okay. So I'm going to maybe come back at you on that.
Sure.
How important is it to have a great relationship with your third-party recruiters?
It is critical. It is our dependence on the future and building for the future, in my opinion, is contingent upon our relationship with them. They are the first point of contact with top talent. So we have to ensure they understand our value proposition, that they understand our culture, that they
right.
speak our language, that they can intelligently speak to what's our 2015 initiatives, et cetera. So I can't put enough emphasis on that relationship, because they're the initial voice of Briggs.
Right. So before you even have a candidate brought before you, your third-party recruiters they already understand your culture. They've vetted the candidate. They've delivered them to you. So at this point, you're ready can move forward with either a phone conversation or an on-site interview?
Absolutely. So the level of exempt position, if it's a typically if it's a sales representative, that's probably going to lead to a telephone conversation first.
Okay.
If it is more of a leader of people, depending on where they're helping us source that talent for, it may be an on-site visit to a local branch or to here corporately, and then we'd build out more of a robust interview slate and schedule for them. It's really position contingent on, is that first one a phone? Is it on site? Is it a combination of? And I also add that we're blessed here at Briggs that a lot of our locations have video conference capability. So what I've really gravitated to and like is if I need to speak with a leader of people, higher position, they may, it will be inexpensive for them to go to a local branch. They're welcomed there. They're brought into their conference room. I go to a conference room here in my office, and I have a video conference interview with them. And that is as close to being as face-to-face as, you know, not being face-to-face.
Okay. I want to let the audience know that we are going to move past that beginning part of the candidate experience and jump right into the interview process. Reed has been identified by a couple of different people and referred to me to talk about this topic because they are at Briggs Equipment are very concerned with providing a quality interview experience, which obviously is going to benefit candidates as they go through this process and help them understand whether or not this is a great job for them. As anybody who has ever worked third party or executive recruitment knows and has shared with candidates is that the interview is just as much the candidate getting to know the opportunity as it is for the hiring manager to get to know the candidate. And so it's vital that the interview be conducted the best way possible so that that information is forthcoming and shared. So what do you think, Reed, when we consider the job seeker, the applicant, the candidate, what do you think they are ultimately looking for when they begin the interview process part of the job search?
So, in my opinion, they are looking for an opportunity to see enough of the inside of that organization to determine if they're willing to make a move to that organization. So, time and time again, what I see candidates responding to my questions looking for in their experience is, and I would lead with this one, is this the correct culture fit for me? And again, I have to remind us, I'm primarily speaking to passive candidates.
Right, right.
So these folks have, they already have a date to the dance, right?
Right.
So we're asking them to come over with us and be our dance partner. So first and foremost, they've got to determine, is this the right culture fit? Am I considering an organization that has financial stability? Is this organization going to be impacted by anything happening in the economy? More often than not, if I come over here, can I continue to grow my career? What are the growth opportunities? And I would say probably tied for third or fourth is when they ultimately are interfacing with the hiring manager, can they visualize themselves respecting that person, taking direction from them, developing under them, learning from them, and growing as a professional.
And all of this is revealed during the interview, not during the first 3 months of employment.
Well, no, because our thought process is we need to pull all the layers of the onion back for that candidate to come in and interview us as much or more
right.
as we're interviewing them because we're looking for a long-term fit. So there, if you start to desire to you know, hide something, so to speak, as an employer, it's not going to benefit anybody downstream.
No.
So we are 1,000% transparent. We do our best to try and place the candidate and the interviewer in a casual environment so we can get to know each other as who we really are.
Okay. Well, that makes sense to me. Not everybody, when we consider the really high, intense conversations that are out there about employment branding, right, and how important it is to lure the right candidates, the right folks to your organization, it makes sense to me that there's a lot of revelation that happens during the interview process. Because the last thing you want, the last thing that the candidate wants is a bad hire to take place, right? When they leave an organization to join your organization, you want there to be a really solid understanding of how that job is going to be and the type of organization this individual is joining and whether or not they are a good, quote-unquote, cultural fit. So I can appreciate so much what you are doing, the efforts that you are putting forth to make sure that there is truth in the interview process. I think that's missing a great deal today.
Ryan, can I add one component to
please.
That? So one of our core values here is family. So that may sound cliche-ish or that, you know, that's just a buzzword for a company. Here, core value is purposely for a family. It's purposely family. We live it. And from a candidate experience perspective, when we as a business decide we are going to invite that person in to our family, that means in a way we're asking them to leave their current family. And the last thing we want to do is make a incorrect hiring decision. And now not only have we negatively impacted our business, but equally or as more important, we've negatively impacted a household.
Right.
So we are very, very careful in, are we sure this is going to be the right move?
Man, I really wish that more organizations put that as a forethought for any type of hiring process, right? I really appreciate that you are doing this at Briggs Equipment. What a great example of really, truly creating a positive candidate experience. So when we're talking about hiring passive candidates, folks that are already actively working for another organization, potentially a competitor, when you consider bringing them on and you have extended an offer, right, and then all of a sudden it falls on the plate of the employee, the future employee, the candidate, to make the decision. I can imagine that there are often times maybe a nervous response or, a feeling of not really being decisive. Is there something special that you do at Briggs Equipment that allows a candidate the opportunity to really evaluate and think and help put them at ease as they are making this decision? Like you stated earlier, this is a life decision. It impacts not only the future employee, but also your current employees. It impacts the culture at your organization and the families that are tied to this process, whether they are the family of the candidate that the offer has been placed to, or when we think about our work family. So how do you put a candidate at ease to allow them to make the right decision?
So we work at that way upstream in the process. So when we get to ultimately where you're talking about in the process and it's time to deliver and then the candidate the opportunity to ponder the offer, we start way upstream, and that's a combination between myself and my recruiters. And that is communicating with the candidate, of putting them at ease by, it's as simple as you're in the driver's seat. So you're a great employee in a great company doing a great job where you're at. So by embarking on this endeavor, by walking through this process with us, by visiting with the group at Briggs, the end of the day, you're still the decision maker. So it's calming them that they're not betraying their company. No decision will be forced upon them. That they're in total control.
Right.
The whole time. Now, throughout the interview process and the feedback we get, particularly for leaders of people, is, and it's not criticism, but the response I get is the process is lengthy. And as I hear that feedback, part of my response is, well, if you are interfacing with an employer and you're getting the sense that it's fairly easy to go to work for them, it's probably not the employer you want to go to work for. So if you're feeling that our process is lengthy and you're meeting with a lot of people, you're accurate, but the reason is we want to be 100% sure that this is the right move for everybody. And as we walk through this process together, I start to narrow the candidate down to two very simple questions. Candidate, do you want to work for Briggs? Yes or no? Briggs, do you want this candidate to work for you? And if one or both of those answers are not a resounding yes, then going to offer stage, putting something together, it's an effort in futility. But whenever the answer for the candidate is yes, resounding, I want to work for Briggs, and then our answer as an organization is resounding, yes, we want you to work for us, then when it comes to presenting the offer, and I've literally walked them through those two questions on the phone or face-to-face, then I say, well, then with a little bit of flexibility on your part and on the company's part, working through this offer process is simply administrative details.
Good.
And I promise you, if we're flexible and you're flexible and you have my commitment, we will be, this will be painless.
It seems so simple, Reed.
I'm a simple man.
but it's not, because you hear and read and see all the time horrible indicators of the fact that this is not taking place at other organizations, right? Where a candidate is leaving an interview process and they are dumbfounded and they are left alone. And so I want to address that too, about when you have to sign off a candidate or tell them, you know, that it's not a resounding yes from Briggs. How does that impact an employment brand if it is not done with dignity and respect for the candidate?
So I will be transparent in that it's a shared responsibility between myself and the recruiters. I will say that when we have spent quite a bit of time with an individual and we hit a point where it's going to be a no, and I'm sensing that in the process, and I know this is the candidate's last face-to-face visit on campus, and they're asking, well, when will I hear something? What will yes look like? What will no look like? And
right.
My response is, we have way too much time together and gotten to know each other way too much for you not to have a personal call from myself or from my recruiters one way or another.
Okay.
If it is a no, from a protection of the organization perspective, we will be a bit limited in the whys. Now, that's
right.
Tough sometimes for the candidate to take, because we're humans, right? We want to know where the miss was, and then we probably want to argue why it wasn't a miss in some
right.
cases.
Right, of course. There's that whole defensive nature.
Yeah, and that's reality. So from a protection perspective, we're pretty limited in what we say, but from a brand protection perspective, when you're sending the message that you genuinely care enough about the person that you're not going to send them a Dear John letter for a decline, that you'd be surprised on how much they appreciate the phone call. Even though they didn't get all the data that they wanted and they didn't get all the answers that they wanted, there is something to be said for the time investment in making the call and letting them know that you care about them, and you as the employer don't feel like this is the right choice.
I think this is what leads to that horrible candidate experience, is when the candidate is left hanging. They've gone through all the steps, they've jumped through every hoop, and they are promised a call or some type of notification where the process is, and they receive nothing. I have my own children, adult children, who have gone through this type of experience and have been have felt humiliated because there was no follow-up, right? I have one daughter that flew to Milwaukee for a job interview, was assured that she would hear from somebody by the end of the next week, and she never heard a thing, right? And it's frustrating for the job seeker. It is it can be debilitating even. They don't know, what did I do wrong? How will I move forward? Do I look for a job? That's the one that I wanted. Am I out of the running? You know, when you're waiting to hear, you don't know, should I move forward? How do I move forward? And so I can appreciate so much the efforts that you are doing, that your recruiters are doing, to make sure that the candidates are kept in the loop, right? It's not every day when you bite the bullet. It was the hardest part of my job as a recruiter, to call a candidate that had gone through all of those steps to be the final field, a part of the final field of candidates, and have to tell them, I'm sorry, but they're moving in a different direction, you aren't getting the job. You know, it's the hardest thing to do, but it is the right thing to do. And there are just not enough recruiters out there that are making the decision to do the right thing. And so I appreciate that you are doing that. I hope that more companies will see the value in that, especially when we start to consider how important employment brand is. And if, as a recruiter, you ever want that candidate to pick up the phone when you call them again, you know, you need to take care of that and treat people with dignity and respect. I told you that this would go quickly. The show has flown by, and we're in the final few minutes of the show, Reed. And I'd just like to ask if you have any last thoughts or anything that you'd like to add about the interview process and its impact on the candidate experience.
Sure. So I guess I would just, in a wrap up, and if there's any employers out there that are really thinking through some shifts in direction, I would just counsel in this regard. Talent, and I'll just underscore the word talent. Talent is easy to find. Top talent is incredibly difficult to find. And when you as an employer make the choice that you're going to hold the bar at top talent and you're going to source passive candidates, the reality that you have to realize is you need them. You need you need top talent more than they need you. If they're top talent, they have more choices in where they can go to work than you have ability to hire them. So it's about walking the fine line of not coming off as walking the line of showing them who you really are and why they should come work for you. And the moment we don't realize that we need top talent more than top talent needs us, we could be perceived as having a condescending approach or give the candidate a perspective that I don't want to work for that employer.
Right. I love that. I think that is such incredibly valuable advice and insight into the hiring process, the wholeness of the hiring process. One of my favorite parts of HR Latte is how I like to get to know my guests, and I ask questions about things that are important to me: food, favorite book, favorite thing to do, place, and so forth. So I'd like to wrap up the show by hitting what I like to call our quick hit faves here on HR Latte. And hopefully you can share some fun new things for the listeners out there. What is your favorite food?
Well, as I've said, I'm a pretty simple man, so this will come as no shock. my favorite food is pizza.
All right.
Specifically homemade pizza, as a matter of fact. You had alluded to us having an addition to our family, and
yeah.
my wife working through sometimes two-on-one coverage when I'm at work. So last night I baked a couple of pizzas from scratch so we'd have a couple of dinners later this week and take some burden off of her, and it's a pretty good meal for us. So pizza takes the prize on favorite food for Reed.
I love that. I love that. I battle between favorite food being pizza and sushi. It's a back and forth battle for me. Having lived outside of Chicago and indulging in Giordano's pizza, anybody out there has ever had Giordano's? Oh, incredible deep dish pizza. So I'm with you on that one. One of the things that I like to talk about here is growth and continual learning. And part of that is reading, whether it's a fictional book or a self-help or a business book. I'm a business book collector, and I love to stroll through the ones that I have and pick up tidbits every now and then. So do you have a favorite book?
I'm going to continue to be transparent with you here, and I'm going to have to tell you that I don't. I'm not a big reader, just to be
okay.
honest with you. So I'm not gonna make something up. I don't spend a whole lot of time behind the written word.
Okay, so are you a movie buff or?
Pre-children, absolutely. now that I got two little ones at home, getting to the movie sometimes is a bit of a challenge. But as I mentioned,
yeah.
working for a small movie theater chain in my past life did lend
yes.
itself to some perks. So,
if you haven't already, I advise you to invest in Netflix. Because you can watch movies from good.
Yeah, we're there, and we watch quite a bit. It's oftentimes though Tinkerbell and
there you go.
Mickey Mouse.
I know. I've been there. I've been there. It does get better. And just enjoy this time because it will go by in the blink of an eye. One of my favorite things to advise folks that have small children is don't blink. Do you have a favorite place in the world? This could be a room in your house, a favorite leather chair. It could be a place in Europe. It could be a park, a ball field.
Yeah,
what's your favorite place?
That's an easy one. That's Arches National Park in Utah.
Ah, yeah, I've been there. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen it in the spring and in the winter, and it's like visiting two different locations.
Oh, it's breathtaking. Just breathtaking. So, and last but not least, Reed, I wrap it up with your favorite thing to do. Interestingly enough, the majority of my guests say their favorite thing to do is work, which speaks a lot to how we are finding passion in our daily lives. But do you have a favorite thing to do?
I do, and work is in it, but wood is in front of it. So I am extremely passionate about being a woodworker.
Oh, I love that. See the things we find out. What's your? Do you have a? Is it artistic or is it functional woodworking?
It's functional. So, in fact, I'm in the middle right now of building a 12-foot by 30-foot garage on the back
wow.
corner of my lot. So I'm doing all the framing myself. I'll do all the electrical work myself, and then I'll contract out the brick work and the roof work. So
that is incredible. Multi-talented.
And then when a big project like that's not going on, then I have a pretty sizable shop devoted to making furniture and cabinets and things of the like.
I love it. I love it. Well, Reed, thank you so much for joining us today. Reed is the head of HR for Briggs Equipment. It has been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for talking us through how valuable and impactful a great interview process can be when we consider the candidate experience. Thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Hey, it was my pleasure, and thanks for having me.
And folks, please tune in next week when we will continue my series on the candidate experience. My guest will be Stephanie Schnick. She is a recruiter slash professional at PricewaterhouseCooper, lengthy history as a recruiter, and we're going to talk about the difference a recruiter, an individual recruiter, the impact that they can have on the candidate experience. I look forward to that show next week, and I thank my guest again. Thanks so much, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you.